I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Maron to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Maron at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
And welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight.
Good evening.
Jay Cross.
Hi, Mark. And hi, Joe.
That was very loud. And Joe Branton.
Farewell.
Hi, Matt.
Go adjust Hello. Your levels. You're never this loud.
The first...
Jay's excited because he's up past his bedtime.
The first loud is the loudest.
This is a late night podcast.
I was going to say, this is either going to go one of two ways.
There was some fluff on my mic and I blew it to try and get rid of it, forgetting that it's a mic.
That would make that noise.
Apologies.
Good. It's going to go one of two ways. I think I know which one of these two ways it's going to go. So this is either going to be probably the worst podcast we've ever done or one of the greatest.
I think it's potentially the latter.
I'm not sure about the vibes yet. We'll see. But yeah, we're recording a lot later than we normally do. So apologies if this has gone up late. I'll try and get it up in the morning. But
we all know that doesn't happen.
The thing is though, Mark, the thing that you've got to sort of bear in mind is that it's only 9:30, which isn't actually that
it's
late.
It's way past my bedtime.
For anybody other than
I was
you.
Up at 5:30 this morning. I'm very tired.
So, I mean, yeah, I was up at 6:30. I'm also a bit tired.
I was up at 7:30. What time did you get up today, Joe?
I got up at 8:45 and phoned the staff
sick.
In my office and told them to sign me in and I'd give them an extra holiday day. And then I turned up an hour late and sat at my desk.
Don't your employers listen to this?
Oh.
Good. This is the latest we've recorded a podcast for a long time. It's 9:30. Yeah.
And we're feeling fine, everybody.
Yeah.
Ladies and germs.
We'll see. If I drop off or start speaking incoherently halfway through the podcast, one of you take over. I'm sure everything will be fine. Branton, you're known for a man of your reserve and cool-headedness.
Better believe it.
If I fall asleep, you're in charge.
I will be on
what?
It.
What? How?
After all these years, you put Joe in charge.
What?
That is...
No,
that is,
what?
Why, I mean, why is he, second in command?
Clearly, I'm the obvious choice to keep things together. No, you're too... you're too zany. You're the zany
one. You're the zany one.
Well, you're too off-topic.
I would say, Jay, you're zany, but Joe's quirky.
As long as I'm not quirky. Wait,
wrestling team.
Where does that? Where zany, does that? Yeah. I would say that you are you're the Kirk, Joe,
okay.
But Joe's more of a Riker. More than a Matt's
Matt?
In engineering.
Matt
no, we.
No,
Matt's in
Spock.
Engineering. I think if we're going to do this, we can only go for captains. So
captains.
Yeah.
Can I be Pike?
Yeah, you definitely are.
You can be Pike, yes. Who would we all be? Pike. I'd like to think.
Wait, can I take Janeway?
Yeah, you can take Janeway.
Janeway's great. They're all great. The captains are all great.
I'm definitely Kirk if we're doing captains, actually.
Really? You're the most.
But you're Chris Pine. You're Chris.
Yeah,
Pine
you're Chris
Kirk.
Pine Kirk. Oh, right.
You're Kirk from the alternate universe where he's just like a little bit.
I think Matt is Sisko.
I want to be Sisko.
I think Matt's Sisko.
What? No, you're that, Janeway.
The rapper.
Yeah, you're Sisko.
Matt, was that the thong song?
Yeah, it was.
Matt Knight, the thong song. So, if you've not listened before, this is a podcast about guitars and stuff. But
I was going to relate it to guitars. I've only ever watched one clip of Star Trek, and that's the one with Tom Morello in it.
Oh,
really?
Yeah.
Oh,
randomly.
God.
I thought you were going to say the one where Data plays the lute when he's dressed in the sort of Shakespearean garb.
There is. It's worth tracking down, actually, for people who aren't into Star Trek, that Tom Morello did do a cameo in Star Trek Voyager. And it's like, it's really, really weird. Because I remember watching it and not knowing who Tom Morello was. And it's this really weird, or not realising it was Tom Morello. And there's this really weird,
It focuses on him a bit too much.
Considering he's never been in the show before. It's just Janeway walking down a corridor. And then, this guy just stops and goes, "Captain on the deck!" And stands to attention. And she stops and goes, "At ease." And he goes, "Thank you." And then that's it. But, it focuses on him for, just too long for it to be comfortable.
I don't like that when they do that. Celebrity cameos, but then they make a big thing of it. They were just in there somewhere, you'd be like, "Oh, that's cool, yeah, it's weird." But
in Game of Thrones, when what was the band that
Sigur were in Ross?
No, the big band in the fight, was it Mastodon?
Oh yeah, Mastodon were in it.
Is it Harry Potter and it's Johnny Greenwood and what's the guy's name from Pulp? They play the
Jarvis
band,
Cocker.
The high school band, don't
yeah,
they?
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, they're and, like the high school band
and,
at one
and
point.
And NSYNC are in Star Wars.
Are they?
Yeah, in the second one.
Empire Strikes Back?
No, that's
they
the
were
fifth.
Big.
Oh, no, I mean,
I love that year.
No, that's the fifth one, you idiot.
When NSYNC had their 1980 number one single.
Stuck in Cloud City with you.
Yes.
They were Jedis who were killed in the arena.
You
when
are
Samuel
definitely
Jackson.
Making
no,
this
no,
up.
No, that's true. Because
that's the worst bit of that.
George Lucas's granddaughter was a massive fan, and right. So he got them in for them.
Do you know what's a rubbish movie? Yeah. Attack of the Clones. Awful. I think it's worse than Phantom Menace.
We need to bring this back round.
It's not.
I think it's worse than Phantom
it's
Menace.
It's not worse than Phantom Menace.
Anyway, Sigur Rós were in Game of Thrones, by the way.
I was trying to think of more bands appearing in films. The only thing I could think was Steve Vai in Crossroads.
Yeah.
What? Flea in The Chase, starring
Charlie Sheen and Henry Rollins is in
that
as well.
Henry Rollins is.
Yeah, Flea's in Back to the Future Turn 3.
I think Oscar, punk band.
I was reading about that today. I was on Oscar's Wikipedia page.
Why are we on that?
I'm just seeing what Devin Williams is up to now. Guitarist.
I had a couple of Devin Williams records that he did afterwards. They weren't great, which was a shame.
So this podcast is definitely going this way then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely going this way.
Can we bring it back round to stuff that I'm interested in?
Can we bring it back round to Star Trek?
Yeah, we'll just do the all Star Trek guitar nerds podcast.
Stephen Hawking is the only person to play themselves in an episode of Star Trek.
Really?
Yep.
How did they put that into storyline?
Data is playing
the lute?
Poker, I think. I think Data is playing poker against some of the world's history's
smartest
greatest
fellas.
Minds, smartest fellas, yeah. So he's playing against, I think it's Galileo, Einstein, and Stephen Hawking, and they actually got Stephen Hawking.
That's
in the
pretty cool.
It was
did they
cool.
get the other ones? Galileo and that?
No, Joe.
Come on, it's Star Trek. It's not Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Yeah, I was just about to think, what would Mozart play in the piano? Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Oh, that's another band who was in a film. Mozart played himself.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
I think.
He did.
Definitely. I think I read that somewhere.
Well, Keanu Reeves. Oh, no. What was the band Keanu Reeves in? Dogstar.
Dogstar. Yeah.
Terrible. Bloody awful. Matt Knight, what have you been up to this week?
I came down to Brighton.
Yes, you did.
Drunk myself into oblivion on Saturday night.
Good.
And then went to watch some music with Joe Branton.
And
had a band rehearsal.
I reckon
all the things.
Least likely of the two guitar nerds to hang out.
What are you talking
about?
When
the
three
think
of us were hanging out.
Four of us, all four.
No. Three. Well, no, the night before when we all got drunk.
That's true.
Just you that didn't hang out with us because you were watching Eurovision.
Yeah, I had to do my Eurovision.
That was music related.
Yeah, I watched Eurovision.
There was the pedal board made of cake.
Someone had a Telemaster.
Nash Telemaster.
Nash Telemaster, yeah. That's cool. Live on Eurovision. That was awesome. So,
but did you see the fake pedal board? There was a thing going around on
I didn't know there was one.
Because no one was plugged in, obviously.
Yeah.
And yeah, someone had a fake pedal board, but like not just a pedal board not plugged in. The pedals looked like they were made out of Play-Doh, but
really?
They were based on real pedals.
I need to check this out. As a bit of a kind of Eurovision fan and obviously a fan of pedal boards, I want to see this hilarious crossover. I'm up for that. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So you two were hanging out in a sort of...
Why are we the least likely? We're the only two that are interested in gear.
Because
it's like the two people Joe, who like music and the two people who like punk.
Because, you're the least likeable out of the four of us. And Matt, like, if he has to come down to Brighton, doesn't want to spend time with you by himself.
Right.
I just think, can you imagine a situation where Leonardo and Raphael hang out? Probably not.
Wait, who does...
Well, no, I'm just saying those are the two least likely turtles to hang out
together.
Are
they? Oh.
Yeah, Raphael's all moody and loner and that. Donatello and Leonardo, yes. Michelangelo can hang out with anyone, obviously.
He's a party dude.
Yeah, he's a party dude. Leo and Raph, what did you get up to?
So me and Joe went to the Lou Reed drones exhibit.
Installation.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
In Brighton.
Yeah.
It was absolutely mind blowing.
Oh man, I'm so disappointed.
So
I
good.
Come.
I'm so sorry to because Jay really wanted to go and didn't get a chance to go, but yeah, it was I didn't know what to expect, and then like when we got to the doorway and they were like, "Oh, you really should. We recommend that you put earplugs in," and we walked in and it was like so unbelievably loud.
So explain the format to the listener of what Lou Reed Drones is.
Lou Reed Drones is basically Lou Reed's guitar tech with seven of his amps and seven of his guitars all feeding back in unison. It's basically manipulating the amps in real time.
And it's actually much less pretentious than that. That makes it sound.
I didn't realise that there was someone actually controlling it. I thought they were just lent up and things were happening.
I didn't think there would be either. No, but the thing was is that, yeah, it's his tech and they were doing it for 5 days for 5 hours at a time. And we actually spoke to one of the guys who was like the stage manager, I suppose, or he's like monitoring the sound at one point. And he's like, yeah, he'd been doing it for 3 days. And he just like doesn't say a word, just literally stands on stage at 12 o'clock, turns all the amps on and then... That's it. He stands there for 5 hours and
right in front of them. Like we'll upload some pictures. I was actually going to do a little bit for the Guitar Nerds website on the event so people could read about it. But I'll upload some pictures as well because it's mental.
You know, you can do both. You can upload pictures to the website.
Oh God. Yeah. Yes. I know.
Yeah.
But
He like tuned like the guitars to different tunings, had capos on different frets, so they weren't all just like to the same tuning. So they're like. They all gave off like different harmonics, and he was turning different amps on and off onto different channels. And
he was doing things like EQ sweeps and stuff as well.
So it was kind of like using the amplifier, like playing the amplifier like an instrument almost. But then all of the cabs were mic'd up from the back.
Yeah, on the back of the cone.
Kind of weird, but I'm assuming it's just pick up the air from the speaker and then fed through a PA system. So it was like super loud.
The loops that were being created from just the harmonics and the sheer amount of feedback was just sonically incredible.
Oh man!
Was there any actual like looping going on, or was it just that the amps were?
But the feedback creates that.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It would grab the feedback itself would grab hold of us like sort of gidding, and it would like just loop that and you just hear things oscillating naturally and interacting with each other. It was just I didn't know that like sound could do that. It was the most ultimate experience
out what
of a
was
sound
coming
wave
from where.
No
you couldn't work out and then when you stood directly in front of it, so you were standing in it was like in a semicircle, and if you stood directly in front of it you could feel the air and the force of the speakers like actually on you, like you could feel how much volume there was. How that guy did it for 5 hours a day with no earplugs.
The stagehand
was
saying no earplugs. The stagehand was saying he's pretty much deaf. But
crikey.
Yeah.
He's been in his tech for years apparently. But yeah, he yeah, it was just a weird experience.
If you closed your eyes, it which sounds incredibly pretentious again, but it took you to a whole other realm of hearing
existence.
Things. Well, you really could hear sort of so much more, and everything sounded so three-dimensional just because it was shaking your ribcage, and it was just everywhere. It was all encompassing.
And then after that, I went and listened to the Lou Reed album Transformer, which I think was his second record. I'd never really listened to him, and actually I was like, oh, he's actually really, really good.
Yeah.
And then I listened to Metal Machine Music and was like, this record is actually really good.
I really like Metal Machine Music. Like, and I was going to ask, do you think that's kind of the influence?
That was the inspiration.
For this exhibition?
Do you know,
I think so.
The weirdest part of the installation was actually his choice of, well, amps partially, but and guitars.
So what was going on?
Yeah, so that's the thing, isn't it? What would you think, Lou Reed as a musician, what sort of guitars are you expecting to see? Bear in mind, the idea of this is, I guess, sort of, you know, feedback-y sustain, as if a guitar makes a difference when you're doing this. But what sort of things?
Well, I mean,
so on the cover of Transformer, he's got some sort of like 335 or something, like a so that's hollow body. Thinking.
Yeah, like
that would probably shake itself to bits.
Yeah, yeah.
That's true, yeah. I mean, I was expecting... like a telly or a 335 or something like that.
So try this then. Steinberger.
Oh, right. Yeah, of course. Okay. Yeah.
There was a
one of the modern ones definitely one of the modern ones. Yeah. Like the movable capo.
Yeah. I knew that actually, that's what he had moved to. I didn't know.
And Sir.
Really?
Rosewood neck. Not just any Sir, they were Pensa Sirs, which were the first Sirs. They were the ones that it was John Sir and I can't remember the other guy, someone Pensa, I can't remember his name, and they built all the early Sirs before he went off and did it as a separate company. But yeah, they were cool. They were like the one was like
there was one telly style.
It was like a telly style one, but one of the strats was like curly maple, but it was like, imagine having flame maple as like the body wood, so you had flame going from like obviously the front all the way to the back.
Oh wow!
With like a solid rosewood neck.
There were two Fenders as well.
Yeah,
there were two Fender Strats again with solid rosewood necks.
Were they? How were they positioned? Were they positioned like lent up against the amps?
Yeah, or
were
so they strings facing the
right
amps,
strings right. face. Yeah, yeah, okay. So you couldn't.
So
really
we just
see...
saw their back.
Yeah.
But you could walk the whole way around, so we could see.
There were.
They had all the cases all the way around, so you could read what was
on
the...
Okay.
And he used... I didn't realise he used Tone King amps. So he had seven Tone King
Galaxies.
Which is cool, because they all look like 50s TV sets in like funky Tolex colours.
And the tech kind of had them in a semicircle around him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, seven... All 112s as well.
Yeah, all 112s. And then the only downside was the lady with the singing bowl who occasionally decided to hit it.
Okay,
and
so that
could,
was...
And believe it or not, you could actually hear
that
this woman
over,
hitting a singing bowl like over 7 amps feeding
Mate.
Back.
So that's the thing. The other side of this installation is unfortunately, as far as we're concerned, because we were there for the sonic experience of hearing that amazing thing and also to look at the gear. Unfortunately, they'd marketed this as being an interactive thing. So they'd encourage people to come down and use it as something to interact with.
All right,
which,
okay.
of course, caused a massive, I don't use the word offensively, a massive hippie sort of vibe.
Sounds like you're
within.
Using the word offensively. Yeah.
Not at all, but it just meant people wandering around the stage with, these...
Tibetan singing bowls.
Yeah.
I like Tibetan singing bowls. I think they're cool.
Yeah. These are like, and there are a lot of like... yoga in circles going on in front of the thing, and like me and Matt are trying to like look at the gear, and there's just this group of people humming and sort of moving their arms around, and we were like,
excuse me, wavy gravy, I need to go look at the guitar amps being used.
Yeah. Like you wait, there's somewhere in Brighton going on right now, there's the Yoga Nerds podcast, and they're like, we were trying to center ourselves, and these three nerds just kept getting in our way, asking to have a look at the guitars. That's what's going on somewhere.
It was weird, though, when one guy pulled out a 12-string and was strumming it in front of the stage. It's like, dude,
no one can hear you.
we're trying to play an acoustic guitar over seven amps feeding back.
The two guys who turned up with violins, I thought, was the best. as if you could hear that over the top.
But overall, it was it was very cool. It was
absolutely an amazing experience. Something I'll always remember. I think that was and they're taking it on tour, so I thoroughly recommend looking up Lou Reed drones and seeing if it's coming somewhere near you, because it is absolutely
cool.
Remarkable.
Presumably they'll be I wouldn't be surprised if it's at like the Barbican or something in London. I really want to go. I'm really disappointed that I couldn't go. Like, the timing was just totally off for me. So it was annoying because it was running, I think it ran Friday till Tuesday,
which is awkward, but it only ran 2 until 5,
which is such an irritating time, because it's like you couldn't go if it was, you know, during work or whatever. But if they're doing it in London, I will really make a proper effort to go, because I'd love to see it.
Yeah.
When you guys were first talking about it, I thought, that sounds pretentious. It sounds a bit rubbish.
Yeah.
Then you said, told me about it, and I was like, yeah, that sounds wicked. And then now you've just told me about the people playing, singing drums and doing yoga back out. If they'd kept that bit out of it, I would have been there.
To be honest, you could go to a performance and those people could not turn up. For what it's worth, they were occasional.
Can we guarantee that?
No, you can't. But most of the time, they weren't. To be honest, the reason me and Matt did decide to leave is because a group of 8 or 10 of them turned up with like a cymbal and a little snare and a 12 string and 2 violins and started wandering around.
I was amazed that you could hear the snare over it.
Yeah, me too, actually.
It was like, really that loud.
Yeah,
like, which
is what I found annoying, because we were sort of like, I could put up with the yoga people there, you know. It was like it was annoying because they were in front of the amps and I was trying to have a look at the gear, but it wasn't the end of the world. I was shutting my eyes and listening to the incredible music. But when at one point me and Matt had walked around the back, so we were looking at the back of the amplifiers, which was really interesting because you could kind of see the guy from the front, so you could see more what he was doing, and we were sort of standing around the back watching from there, and this woman just carrying a cymbal and hitting it sort of comes up, stands in between us and like starts hitting the cymbal like right when we're obviously like just trying to watch the gear. We've moved away from where they are. She just came over with the cymbal.
Was she sort of trying to
get
you,
walked off again?
Was she just trying to get you involved or something?
No,
or
I think she was being very spiritual. I think.
Whatever.
But that was a shame. That was a shame. But I do also think that that's something that is probably going to be exclusive to the Brighton performance.
Are you going to write up a little review?
Yes, I will. Do
what you've just said. Put that on the site.
I will.
And make sure you slag off the yoga people.
I did, actually. I mentioned it on Twitter just to, you know, to sort of be aware to the group that I did think, and I don't think there was anyone in there other than the people performing who who thought that the people performing was a good idea.
Right.
Like, everyone else was there for Lou Reed drones. No one was there to see some people, you know, smacking a cymbal because they felt spiritual about some amps on
just
feedback.
Just remember that next time your rubbish band is supporting a band that people actually want to see.
No one wants you to be here.
Just
polymath.
Just get on with it, mate. Just get on with it and then go and drink the rest of your free beer.
Like my band, support bands. Jesus.
Wow.
Wait.
We do, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say. Anything else, Matt Knight? Anything else you've been doing this week?
I also had a band practice, and I was so rusty, it was unbelievable.
When you say rusty, do you mean hungover?
I was also very hungover. No, actually, I was probably all right by the time we started. I was probably just
I don't know. You looked like so pale that it looked like the colour was draining out of your beard. Like,
we did actually the morning of the day that Matt had a band practice, we all had a meeting at Jay's house,
and I made breakfast.
You made breakfast for us all, and the meeting lasted maybe an hour, maybe more, longer than it should have, because Matt kept having to go to the bathroom to be sick.
Yeah, I was in a pretty bad way. Not as bad as my bank statement this morning. Bad times.
Oh dear. So this band practice, what sort of thing was it? What gear were you using?
Well, did I tell you that I was like, I should probably take like my main pedal board, because, you know, haven't really had a chance to use it. Turned up, couldn't lift it.
Really?
it was so heavy. I was like, if I carry it in the bag that the pedal train bag they supply, I was like, my shoulder will drop off.
Sorry, so not even when it's in a hard case.
Not
even
in a hard case. No, it's just in the bag.
It's a soft case version.
Yeah, but the
Which pedal train?
The thing is, I had to carry it all the way to Guildford, then from Guildford all the way to Brighton. So I was like, I'm just not going to bother.
I chucked
a load of other random pedals in a bag and took that instead.
Mate, what you should have done was you should have just taken it to like the train station at Guildford, and then with a bike lock, just like chained it to the outside, taken it to the bike lock station, and just dropped it off there. No one would have lifted it.
Just get it couriered down.
Yeah, well, I think the thing is, it's basically, yeah, the bags that... It's a shame, actually, because the bags that Pedal Train now provide, I don't think, are as nice as the bags they used to provide.
Well, they don't have storage pockets anymore. They're literally the bag themselves.
Because it's just like a thin cotton strap on a piece of rubber, it just, like, after about 2 minutes, it's like cut into your shoulder. And I know Mono make replacement bags, but they're more than the...
They are too expensive, those Mono ones, definitely, for what they are. What pedal train
So I'm just going to buy a trolley instead and just wheel it around on a trolley.
What pedal train is it, mate?
Pedal Train Pro.
Right,
Pro.
Right, okay. Okay. So what pedals did you throw in the bag?
I took the fuzz pedal that the person I had a jam with made for me. Which was quite cool. It's got a harmonic percolator clone built into it. So I used that for basically the whole time, plugged into an Orange AD30, turned up nearly full.
Wow!
And
amazing.
It just sounded amazing. And that was basically it. To be honest, I had the Danelectro delay and the Ibanez mini delay, and a wah pedal, and that was it.
What sort of?
I was like, oh, maybe I don't need a load of pedals.
What sort of stuff are you doing?
It was kind of a mixture between extremes of kind of Godspeed, so like really ambient stuff, and then kind of like Melvins, so like really heavy, doomy, down-tuned.
Nice.
It was really interesting. So, yeah.
What
so
are you calling it?
I haven't decided yet. Okay. I've got a few names in the pipeline, but we're going to see what happens.
No,
I was going to say the guy that I was rehearsing with is moving house, and he has a fairly young child, so he doesn't have a lot of time to rehearse. So he's always trying to find time to come down and do it.
Whilst we're mentioning Pedal Train, a question for the listeners. Does anyone know why there is an extra bar in the Novo series of pedal trains?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense, Matt. It doesn't make sense.
It's for the mini pedals.
No. You can't. What? No. It's not. Only if you have only middle mini pedals on your lower row. It doesn't make sense. It's just an extra row. It doesn't make sense. You can't have three tiers of pedals. It's not deep enough for that. But it's too deep for two tiers. It's the worst sizing I've ever seen.
Isn't it two like Boss compact size and then a mini pedal?
No, mate. No, it's two close rows together at the bottom.
Right.
So a mini pedal can be supported.
Yeah.
But then they have three rows above that. Now that's the problem, because a full size pedal only takes up two. So those two close rows will support a Boss pedal or a mini pedal.
What if you turn the mini pedal on its side?
You could put it on its side and put it in the middle row, but that's not enough room to have cables either side of it with a pedal on the row below and the pedal on the row. You can check this out on that Pedal Train building site. What is it called? Pedal Planner. Pedal Board Planner. Check it out there. If anyone can actually make a Novo pedal board work, I mean, let me know, because I can see no reason to buy them.
There we go. That's your task for this week in the Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/guitar-nerds-forum. Joe Branton has challenged you. He has laid down the gauntlet. He has glove slapped you and said,
print screen me your actual working pedal boards in a Novo format.
I want to see that, definitely. Jay Cross.
Hiya.
Anything to report this week?
I put on a gig this weekend.
Okay.
Not a huge amount of excitement to report there. One of the bands was playing a Blues Junior and a Telecaster.
That was the same night that me and Matt went
to... which is why I couldn't come, unfortunately. But yeah, other than that, it was unfortunately just another punk rock show where everybody used the same gear.
JCMs and tellies and stuff.
Yes, yeah, JCMs, tellies. There was a couple of interesting Squire JVs.
Okay, nice.
This band, Caves, who I put on, they were both using, it was a JV P bass and a JV Jaguar, I think.
Oh, really? That's great.
That did not exist.
Jazzmaster?
Did not exist. Strats and Tellys only, JVs.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Okay. It was, maybe it was like a Korean Jaguar or something.
Could have
been. It's been severely messed about with.
I've got a lot of time for those Korean squires. I think
some of them are very hit and miss.
Really? I've owned some really good ones. The best Strat I ever owned was a Korean one. And I mean, it cost me nothing and was amazing.
I actually think that there's far too much nostalgia on a lot of those on a lot of those things. I think that like for the money that you would pay for a decent like old Korean squire, you will get a better guitar buying a modern classic vibe.
Yeah, I would have thought that. It was only because the Strat that I had was like a faded candy apple, and it's a vintage lacquered neck, and it was it played like a classic vibe.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And it was £150 quid.
You'll always, there will always be. I'm just saying, sort of in general. I think in general those. I know I bang on about it all the time, but those classic vibes I think are such great value for money. Like I don't really like the Mexican standard stuff.
I've never
been a huge fan of Mexican standard Fender Mexican standard Telecaster Strats or any of the basses. I just think that like value for money, they're not great. Like, you know, I know when I was working in the guitar shop, I used to have people just being like, "What are you talking about? This is so much better than look that one says Squire on it. This one's much better." And it's like, but it's, listen to it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
It's horses for courses.
But even at its price point, I mean, actually, since on the weekend I dropped Jay's guitars back to him, which have been at my house for months.
And I was going to say that's something that happened this weekend. You finally got your guitars returned to you.
I did, yeah, and I played them for a bit as well.
Yeah, and put a picture up on Instagram of them on the Guitar Nerd's Instagram.
No, those were that's my old Les Paul.
Oh, was
that's
it?
A really old picture.
I see. No.
Yes,
I noticed that because it looks like it was taken about 4 iPhones ago.
Yeah,
yeah, it was something like that. Yeah, yeah.
But because I'd given you your guitars back, I was like, oh, I kind of need
a guitar
in the house. So I was looking at stuff today at work, and I was thinking, I'm going through a real like Gibson phase at the moment, but I was like, oh, I don't really want to spend the money on a Gibson. So I was like, oh, maybe I'll get an Epiphone. It's just to kick around. So I was like, maybe I'll just get an Epiphone. And I sort of AB'd a few things and realised sort of for, you know, value to the pound, the classic vibe stuff is just...
so much better.
It's uncomparable.
No, no,
I know. Epiphone is supposed to be a competitor of that, and I'm like, you're not. Like, even though I really wanted, like, a glued neck, like a real sort of Gibson-style thing, I was just... the quality on the classic vibes is to a professional standard. And,
yeah.
And the Epiphones... aren't for the best part.
Get a Gretsch, get a Streamliner or something.
That is the other one. Gretsch have got some interesting new stuff on the horizon.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? Are you allowed to talk about it or not?
I don't think I should be specific to avoid things. Well, let's not talk about it. There's some interesting stuff on its way.
You can tell me though, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll just pretend to turn these microphones off.
Good. No way! Pink Sparkle?
Unbelievable! I'd love it if there was Pink Sparkle Gretsch. I would probably buy one straight away.
Actually, I was looking at... Matt, you've probably had the same email through from Gibson.
The True Historic. Yeah. The Historic Select 54 Les Paul.
I knew you'd know about this.
Pink and blue Sparkle.
And blue Sparkle.
What?
UK Historic Select. So they're only going to be over here. Pink and blue Sparkle. I imagine both, well, obviously, both Matt's shop and my shop have been offered them.
I'm sure there's just some really evil person who listens to this podcast, just like, I'm just going to keep building these guitars.
Knows exactly what Matt Knight's after.
Yeah,
definitely.
But yeah, was it just under the, a pound under the £5,000 mark, I think, for either ones? Because it is part of, but it's part of the True Historic. But you're talking about something that's going to be...
wrap around...
Oh man, 54s are so cool.
54s in Pink Sparkle. Wrap around the
290s.
Absolutely.
That classic True Historic, that classic 54 finish Pink Sparkle.
But and actually the Pink Sparkle is plateless as well, whereas the blue one comes with a black plate.
That sounds really good.
That sounds amazing.
Really good. Yeah. Joe Branton, apart from lusting over custom shop Les Pauls, what have you been up to this week?
Seeing Matt, but other than the amazing Lou Reed drones, I got a Mel 9. An Electro Harmonix Mel 9.
I saw that photo a minute ago because I was bored of the previous conversation.
Good.
So I was just flicking through Facebook.
All right, yeah. There it
So why have you bought a Mel 9?
Because it's because I'm in a prog band, mate, and it's a Mellotron. It's a Mellotron simulator.
Okay, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you? But you're not playing it. Surely your guitarist must
be
playing it.
You know, I got two. One for him, one for me.
Did you actually?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. So it doesn't really track on bass.
No, I didn't think it would.
But that's okay. I'm going to keep it for me, for home.
Hasn't that one got steel drums on it, or is it the other one?
What? No, it's got Mellotron sounds on it, you buffoon.
But one of them, I think maybe it's the Keynine. Keynine's got steel drums. I mean, that's
the Keynine is when they were running out of ideas by that, because you had the B9, the C9. The Keynine was the third one, which was just desperate. And now they finally thought of something new.
What's next? What do we think the next? Synth 9?
Maybe, but come on, it's a Mellotron in pedal form. And incidentally, the Mel 9 has been, on paper, certainly for my company, the most popular pedal of this year and possibly already of last year. We've sold in excess of 250.
The what? Has the Mel 9?
The Mel 9. That's why it was announced... long
you'll
ago,
see, you'll and see 230 of those on eBay in about 2 months' time.
Yeah, this is the risk, isn't it? I think it is a very difficult pedal to use, as I am fully aware.
I think what you should be doing, Joe, is how controllable is it? Like how often do you? Where do you put it in? So in your guitarist's rig, is it in the front end? So does it split off? So just a backtrack slightly, in Joe's band the guitarist uses two amps and some pedals go through both amps and some pedals only go through one or the other, right?
Is the
Mel 9 going to be going through both amps, or will it split? Because like
it would just
it's
be
quite
one.
An overpowering sound.
You'd use it like an octaver.
Well, see, so
it, because that's essentially what that this is.
See, if I was you and you want to utilize it, you should get like get a random tone generator, and you should have like just have it going on so that it like and like set the tempo on the random tone generator to roughly the tempo of your song, and just have it low in the mix going over the background.
But you can't set it in every now. You can't set the key on a random tone generator though, can you? Because it will be playing like random, so literally random stuff.
I think really what Tim has in mind is he also got one of those Electro Harmonix Leslie simulators.
Oh yeah.
And I think our last record has a lot of Mellotron, actual Mellotron going through a Leslie.
Yeah, didn't you hire one?
We did. So that's and there's a Leslie speaker at Brighton Electric where we.
Where we
record. So I think the idea is to simulate a lot of those parts. But yeah, I mean, come on, if you were in like a prog band or even just like sort of a vintage sounding band like that, Electro Harmonix releasing the Leslie simulator and the Mel 9, this is a really interesting thing. And the thing about these pedals, certainly with the Mel 9, the B9, the C9, the Key 9, because of the way they track, whilst they are marketed as a guitar pedal, actually that's probably the hardest instrument to get it to track on, because of course they don't respond very well to bending and things like that.
It's got to pick out the pitch and things like that, exactly. Whereas a keyboard is a bit more defined.
So plug it into a simple little synthesizer on a really basic sound, cut all of the direct signal and boost all of the blend, and you've got yourself a really convincing Mellotron.
We said that about the B9 as well. If you just you could plug a Casio keyboard into into one of those B9s.
But get a Casio keyboard, a Mel 9, and one of the Leslie simulators, and the Leslie and the Mel 9 are in excess of £160 each, but nonetheless, that's still less than the £3,000 it will cost you for a Mellotron, and the £5,000 it will cost you for a Leslie speaker.
£5,000.
I don't know. They're a lot of money these days.
Didn't the company that actually originally make Mellotron now make a digital version?
Do they? I didn't know.
Yeah. I think it's called the... No, this might sound ridiculous. I think it's called the Melnotron, and it's basically it's like a MIDI controller, but it's like a hardware keyboard that basically it samples all of the original Mellotron sounds, including how long the tapes last on all the keys.
Really? Like so, like, you've got limited... Oh, I see what you mean, like how many cycles are on the tape type
thing. Yeah, because that's... Well, no, because obviously what happens on an original Mellotron is it's full of 200 tapes. So, and the tapes are actual recordings of instruments. So when you press the key, it plays the tape, but the tape will eventually get to the end.
Yeah.
And you can only reset the tape by letting go of the key. And I think the digital ones do a similar thing.
Oh, right. Wow.
Yeah, that's why, like, you can't sustain notes for, like, really long periods of time. So you have to let go of the key to reset the tape. But that's why they're so expensive, because they're almost impossible to maintain, because you can't... I think there's some people out there making, like, reproduction tapes.
Yeah, they're so expensive to service, because you... Sorry, are you two done opening those beers? They're so expensive to service because you basically have to take them out and, like, work on each tape individually. So, you know, if a tape breaks or there's a part of the tape that is, like... you know, malfunctioning, you have to take all of the tapes out of it and sort the tapes out individually. It's a long old process.
When, on December the 22nd, when your Christmas lights go out on your tree...
You've got to find
the one that's not working.
No, because you should know... So we've talked about this before, but the way the Mellotron works is it speeds the tape up and down depending on what key you're pressing. So to play... play that note. And so as long as you, like, if you know that the flute sound is broken, it's the flute tape. But, like, if you're doing a full service of a Mellotron... There's a really good documentary, and I don't know... I think it's on YouTube somewhere. I think it's called In the Air Tonight. It's about Paul McCartney recording that Flaming Pie album, which is a great album. He... talks about his Mellotron on there, and he I think it's the Strawberry Fields one. So the one that was, you know, the most famous use of the Mellotron probably at the beginning of Strawberry Fields. He plays some stuff on that, and what I didn't realise about the Mellotron is some of the tapes are actually drum loops, because it was initially made for people doing like variety shows to have like acts that singers could like come and sing over.
Right.
So as well as you having like the instruments on there, so you could, let's say with your right hand, I think you can select like flutes, so you can play your flute melody.
Yeah.
I think you can have the bottom half of the keyboard as triggering like bossa nova drum loop.
Right.
But it doesn't sound like an old drum machine, you know, that kind of clicky, kind of poppy, like analog drum machine type sound, because they're like actual recording of bands.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
On these tape loops. Go and seek out that Paul McCartney documentary. It's really good.
I was just actually having a look. I thought I'd quickly Google Mellotron to see what come up. The people who own Mellotron.com actually still make a Mellotron. They make a analog Mellotron.
How much?
Is 6,000. No, sorry, that's just for, yeah, $7,100.
Okay.
Or $7,900 if you want it in hardwood, or if you want it in plexi so you can see through it, $11,400.
Oh my god, I would pay
And I was just on eBay. There's none on eBay, but just in case you've got a vintage one and you're like, ah, oh, the tapes have gone, you can buy a whole reel of original Mellotron BBC tapes for £1,150.
Wow.
Sounds about right.
Isn't it a shame that an instrument that was so unique and sounds so incredible and really defined, like, more than a genre, has become so exclusive? Like, it should be the sort of thing that's become accessible. It's just a shame. Like, that, and I think it speaks volumes that the Mel 9 has been such a successful pedal. It's been such a successful pedal because people are starved for that instrument, and evidently all the proggers came out of the woodwork to buy it.
It's weird though, because most people would have probably, most people would have probably never used one, and it's kind of like, yeah.
But anyone who's even come across a King Crimson record and wanted to replicate some of that would, you know, want a Mel 9. And I think for £160 or whatever they are, then.
The other interesting fact that comes out of that Paul McCartney documentary is when they were doing a shift to a lot of like digital effects and stuff in the, 80s, and they're getting a load of synthesizer stuff in Abbey Road. He basically went and bought everything because they were doing like a clearance sale on all their like vintage gear.
Oh, fools.
And at the time, you know, everyone was like, why are you buying this old tat? Like, why would you want a Mellotron when we've got like samplers and stuff? And he was like, no, I'll probably take that. I'll probably take the Mellotron that was the intro to Strawberry Fields for not a lot of money. I'll probably have that one in my house. And they were like, yeah, whatever. Just take it, old man. We've got synths. And so now his studios are basically like all the, like, he's got some of the old desks and stuff out of Abbey Road.
Amazing.
So, yeah, it's really good. Go and check that out. There's also a cool story on there, and this might be of interest to you. He owns Bill Black's bass. Bill Black was Elvis Presley's bass player,
right,
in the initial incarnation of Elvis's band, I think. And it's that one you see in, like, I think it's the Jailhouse Rock video, or maybe it's Heartbreak Hotel, a famous Elvis video that's like all black with the white pinstriped edge. It's like really iconic bass. Uh-huh. And he plays that on this documentary, and it's like that bass has got a proper sound, like, that you just wouldn't be able to replicate.
That really, like, so percussive 50s sort
totally,
of
totally,
yeah.
Totally. Real clicky, but also, like, real, really, like, rich sounding.
Amazing. Yeah. I need to watch this documentary.
It's an audio documentary, but I think it's on YouTube somewhere.
I was going to say, I thought it was really interesting, actually, because on the Facebook group, someone put up a picture of the Beatles playing on the rooftop and how, like, stripped back their setup was. And you were saying that basically everyone but Paul McCartney hated it because they wanted to use modern technology, and Paul McCartney was like, nah, just screw all that. Just plug a guitar into an amp.
I think so. What happened there was they'd obviously come off the back of recording, like, Sgt. Pepper's and, like, Magical Mystery Tour and, to some extent, White Album, where they're all, like, separate and recording all their bits, and, like, being the kind of Boy Scout, ever-positive Boy Scout that he is, he was like, look, we've all had a bit of a falling out, but what we'll definitely sort this is what we need to do is get out of Abbey Road and go and all sit and, like, just record this album where we don't use any overdubs and we just record it, like, back in the old days, boys. What we'll do is we'll go to, it's like, it's not Pinewood, but it's like a similar studio, like an aircraft hangar. It's like, we'll film it. It'll be so good. It'll be like back in the day, just jamming, me and the boys. and they all hate each other at this point. And there's literally a bit where they're like, this is all filmed for the Let It Be, the film. And there's a bit where a song breaks down and George is at Paul saying like, oh, can you just play it like this? And George is basically is the ultimate passive aggressive. And he's like, yeah, just, you know, just tell me how to play it and I'll just play it like that. And it just looks horrible. Like they should be in, they should be in Abbey Road, like in a warm studio.
Hadn't they only been a band for like 6 years at this point or something?
So that's like 1969, so and the first album's 63.
But you've also got to think, by that point, 69, they hadn't actually like played as a band for like 2 or 3 years, because most of their recordings were all done in stages as well. So when I think they went to do, you know, yeah, Let It Be, and they were playing live, they were like, oh, we don't really know how to play as a live band anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
We've not recorded a track as a band for years.
Definitely. And some really good points came up in that thread, actually. Someone was saying, and, you know, there's a valid point, like, you don't necessarily need a load of pedals to be a good guitarist or be a good band. I don't think that was, like, out of choice for the Beatles. Obviously, in 1969, when you think what pedals had actually come out, you know, a couple of fuzzes, a wah, that's about it, really.
And a Watkins copycat.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah.
So,
yeah.
Some, like, probably anything.
But, you know, no one was making, like, delay pedals or anything like that. So, I'm sure the Beatles probably would have used that sort of stuff.
They were at cutting edge. I mean, you know, they moved to Marshall as soon as they could, and you know they were trying to do everything they could to stay.
Yeah,
they weren't a vintage band, really, were they? Despite their gear, they were always trying to play the latest thing.
And it's funny, you do, like, that's one of the things that is a recurring theme, I think, whenever you think of a band of like that people think of as, like, you know, quite often you think of someone like The Who, and it's like, oh yeah, The Who, real like classic, like, rock and roll band. It's like, The Who were investing in, like, The Who invested in, like, IMAX. That's, like, the reason that IMAX came about was because of The Who. Like, they
were, is that true?
Yeah.
Really? Okay.
Maybe not solely them, but, cool. Like, they, like, invested a lot of money in IMAX, and, like, they were constantly pushing money into new tech.
I mean, Entwistle did have a signature Dean with spider webs on.
Yeah, nice. Well, and I was also going to say, the ultimate, to finish this Beatles conversation, the ultimate example of that is going to record Free as a Bird. Paul, do you want to bring the Hofner along?
I love this story.
No, I'll leave it. What I'll bring is the active five-string wow. Really get that vintage vibe going when we're recording.
I love that. You said this before, the way, like, they all turned up and, you know, George was there with his Rosewood telly to sort of bring back those vibes.
I'm not sure it is the Rosewood telly, but like an old
sort of thing.
John
Lennon was dead at this point. Yeah. So,
oh, okay, right. John Lennon's bringing the nostalgia feels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, okay.
And the old five string wow.
Amazing. So they've got this found footage of a John Lennon vocal that they're going to put a song to and release a Beatles song.
That, okay.
An after death Beatles song. This is massive. This is the Beatles getting an after death lease of life where they can put something to John Lennon's lyrics, which have been found after he's dead, and this will last for all of time. And Paul McCartney turned up with a five string.
Yes, active. I mean, wow, pretty sweet. The other thing about that session is that George Martin opted not to produce it because he said, oh, "I'm a bit old and my ears are getting bad and." There's some theories. You go and look at this up on the internet about why he didn't do it, because his ears definitely weren't.
Is it because Paul McCartney actually died in 1966?
No, it's not that. go and look it up. There's some theories about that. His ears were obviously good enough to, remaster the entire Beatles back catalogue for the anthology that year, but couldn't do the recording sessions. Maybe it's that he didn't like one of them very much and didn't want to spend that long in a room with them doing the recording. I'll leave you to speculate which one.
There we go. Clearly George.
Well,
the best one.
Maybe, maybe not.
But then also, you know, recorded best song of all time.
What was that?
Got my mind set on you.
I think with that, maybe we should call it an evening. Maybe Jay Cross.
Oh, wow, have we blitzed through an hour?
No, we haven't.
Yeah, we've almost done an hour. Let's do one bit of news, actually. Let's give him a little cheeky bit of bonus news.
I haven't even got there yet.
I know.
Nudes.
Okay, so one big bit of news this week. Source Audio have released the LA Lady Overdrive, the Kingmaker Fuzz, and the Aftershock Bass Distortion.
But Matt, this is a bigger announcement than it sounds.
Matt Knight, tell us about them.
The reason I think this is very cool, because I think by the names of the pedals, you can kind of guess the sort of sound that you're going to get out of them. And I think the biggest feature is the fact that they are all like MIDI controllable drives, and they can all be edited in a similar way to TC can be edited via Timeprint, because they have the Source Audio Neuro technology built in, which basically allows you to plug your phone in via headphone jack into the second input on the pedal. And then you can edit all the sounds and save 128 presets, which then can be recalled later on.
It's brilliant. I mean, I only checked the Aftershock Bass Distortion out, but the Aftershock Bass Distortion features standard controls really for a distortion. It features a clean and a drive, and then a couple of EQ settings, I think. And it's not EQ settings. I think it's maybe an overall tone and something else, but. It has a toggle switch to switch between like fuzz, vintage, and a modern sound. But the plugging it in allows you to alter the EQ, so you can actually treat the EQ in a banded form rather than just having an overall tone control, and you can then preset that to the pedal. And if that wasn't enough, you don't just have to have the three drive channels that it has built into the pedal. You have access, whilst it's called a fuzz or a distortion rather, you have access to fuzz, distortion, and overdrive patches all available on the the software package that Source Audio have released. So
it's Source Audio sort of tackling the tone print market.
They don't shy away from tech, do they, Source Audio?
No,
if you look at their previous
at
stuff, they've done those kind of bulky like plastic pedals that really
look like
weird
SNES controllers.
Yeah, have a lot of like filtering, and they did that whatever it was called,
the hot hand,
which is the kind of like motion sensor control.
Didn't
for the
they
pedals.
Also do the controlless graphic EQ?
They've got a MIDI. They have a MIDI controllable EQ, so you can have like sets of like EQ. But they had like some weird filter pedals and stuff like that.
Yeah,
and they've got like a dual expression pedal, and the expression pedal can do like loads of different things at once. But yeah, you use something called the Neuro Hub, and it's just MIDI in and MIDI out, and it's got five control ports, and you plug it into five pedals, and it can basically send out, you can basically use your phone to create like scenes of pedals, which, so if you imagine five pedals all with 128 presets where you can change the signal routing on every one, and then you can use a MIDI controller to switch between presets. I think that's quite cool. And because they're drives, they've got stereo in and stereo out because of this technology, which means that you can change the way the signal splits. So you can, all of the drives, for example, have like dry out and like affected out, or you can mix the signal in different ways, which I think is quite cool. It makes it like, I think the thing is so many people go, oh, what haven't we done? Oh, well, we haven't made a fuzz. What should we stick on it? Oh, we'll put an octave on it. And it's like, well, you know, how can you take it to something that's going to be more compatible with like more modern pedal boards, and MIDI is obviously like a big thing at the moment. So I think that's quite cool that they've sort of managed to fit that in there.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, we haven't heard them, so provided they sound good, I think on paper these are actually really great pedals. They look good as well. They've gone for a sort of vintage boutique look.
They have. I think they're a nice,
and it's in purple. So it is Kingmaker Fuzz.
It is in purple.
They're orange for the bass one, which is also pretty cool, metallic orange.
Yeah. Bass pedals, people normally go for black, don't they, for some reason? Yeah. They always seem to go more muted.
It's a bit of an afterthought, isn't it? Oh, God, we've got to make a bass pedal.
Make it just no... Just don't put a finish on it. It's black, that's done. Interesting to see how they turn out. I think they're a nice compromise between the new tech, as Matt was saying, and some kind of more basic effects. I've always really wanted to like Source Audio, but do I really need a motion-controlled filter pedal?
Well, they're also really weird sizes, their old pedals.
Yeah.
I couldn't see them actually fitting on a board. This feels to me like a real step forward. This is intelligent tech. They look boutique and vintage.
Yeah.
And they've started to actually think, not only that, they've started to be like, right, okay, we actually need to sell these. Yeah. Why aren't people buying them?
And they're good prices as well, by the looks of it. I think these are actually
Chinese-made, I think, aren't they?
Right.
Yeah, this could potentially be the birth of Source Audio being a contender, I think.
They're one of those companies that's always just sort of, like, bubbled under the surface because, like, Source Audio, it's not a very cool name, is it? You know, it's not like Strymon or Zvex. You know,
Electro-harmonics.
Yeah, it doesn't like... hello, then I bought a Source Audio pedal. Like, it's not, it doesn't scream cool at you. And, like, with
all
of these...
Sounds like studio gear, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And with all of, you know, I think the big thing is as you say, Joe, like, the sort of aesthetics and the logistics of trying to get it onto a pedal board is something that is, you know, it is a relatively, like, new concern that manufacturers are having to deal with nowadays. You know, it's why, like... weird fuzzes, you know, of like 10 years ago aren't hugely popular because, like, those big boxes people just don't want anymore, you know. And
yeah, make a big box effects at your peril.
Absolutely. And, you know, why so many of the, like, more boutique-y companies are putting the top mounted jacks, just because it's more convenient and you can get my, you know, people like that stuff, and it's really cool. I like Source Audio. I think they're a very, very cool company, and it would be, I'm always rooting for the underdog.
Yeah. I agree. It would be great if these effects are good. On paper, they're great.
Well, my only slight concern with this is that, do you remember maybe like 18 months ago or so, maybe 2 years ago, we had a very similar conversation about Zoom? Do you remember when Zoom brought out, like, they brought out the MS...
The MS-70 CDR.
Yeah, yeah. And they brought out a couple of, like, cool pedals, and it's like, oh, wow. And then they brought out there was the H6, which we really liked, and we're still using
the
H6.
Yeah, still using it.
And like, they revamped all of their multi-effects, and it's like, oh, man, this is a rebirth of Zoom. And then that's it.
Yeah, they haven't done anything
for
a while.
Nothing came of it. And it's, you know, it'd be cool if Source Audio mounted a challenge.
Yes, indeed. With that, I think we're going to call an end to this show. We're going to go over to patreon.com/guitar nerds and do another half an hour of questions. We do that every week. If you want to get involved in that and get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, patreon.com/guitar nerds. For as little as $5 a month, you can get this our extra weekly episode.
That's not much money.
It's not much money. You're right. And $10 a month gets you onto our executive list. At the moment... is full, so keep an eye on it. A new spot may open up. These people have done so. Do you want to read them out, Joe?
I will.
Good. Let's do it.
Andrew Marco, Brad Page, Mark Cross, Mark Rice, Rob Pierce, JD Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Eric Seary, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Fletch Fletcher, Phil Thompson, Laurie Anstis, Moo Kravitz, Colin Anderson.
Guitar Nerds for all your ASMR needs.
That's what you need.
You can see more.
Listen to it whenever you want.
Oh, it's creepy. You can see more Guitar Nerds content at guitarnerds.net. You can follow us on Twitter @GuitarNerds, Instagram @GuitarNerds, Periscope @GuitarNerds. You can go over to YouTube, youtube.com/GuitarNerds videos, or you can follow us all individually @Mark_Random, @Matt_Nightsy, @JAYBM1, and @Yosef_900. Creepy. Very creepy indeed. Thanks for listening this week. Bit of a weird podcast, but I'm feeling the vibes. I think the Patreon episode is going to be even more vibed.
Ooh.
It's going to be right vibed up. See you next week.
Bye, gang.
Farewell.
Bye.
See you later. Make sure you check out the Patreon if you can, and travel safely if you're traveling to work, or hey, if you're at home, sit back, relax, maybe pour yourself a beer or a wine, and enjoy listening to us talk about guitars, because you know and I know that guitars are an important thing. Yeah.
So creepy.
Hey,
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.